Welcome, everybody, and thank you for being here today. I know it's, especially with the beautiful weather outside, I'm sure it's tempting to be outside, not inside. Session today, I'd like to introduce you to some ideas around trends in cloud computing. This information comes from a tool that I've been working on for the past year that I'll introduce you to you in just a bit. My name is Frank Simmerjee. I'm a senior product marketing manager for Microsoft. I work out of the Redmond office in Seattle. Got in yesterday, so feel really good right about now. Nice and jet lagged. Now, I have some stuff which I'll be glad to give away. I have some brochures on the report. Additionally, I have some reports, only a couple of them, so we'll give them to whoever's interested in coming up here and grabbing one. I also have some additional items about transparency in the cloud. It's a report on being able to comprehend and be able to utilize the information, especially if you're familiar with the Cloud Security Alliance. It's a very close relationship with how we operate with them. So moving right ahead, a little bit about trustworthy computing. Our business doesn't sell product. I'm not here to sell you anything. In fact, everything I'm going to tell you is free, and it's been created to make your experience utilizing the internet safer and better. There's three primary pillars that we care about: security, privacy, and reliability. So if these are concerns that you're having to deal with, I suspect the material that I'll present to you today will actually have some impact for your day-to-day business, especially if you're considering cloud capabilities in your future. So I guess that leads the question is, if you're sitting here, odds are that you actually do care about cloud computing in your organization, and you've probably been approached in one capacity or another. I won't go into source code, so if you're looking for any of that, no source code today. But I will talk about a tool, and I know everybody likes tools. I like tools. I hope you like tools. All right, a little bit about cloud computing just to make sure that we level set a couple of basic elements. So there was a research study done by Wakefield Research. It primarily addresses U.S. customers, but the individuals that were surveyed were looked into as in what are the biggest trends associated with cloud computing. Well, it turns out that half of the respondents believe that bad weather affects cloud computing. So next time the weather's bad here or bad at wherever you live, just realize that your customers think that that's actually impacting cloud computing. In all reality, we also see the fact that half of those people, probably the same people, believe they don't use cloud computing. But 97% use a service such as shopping or online banking. So the reality is they're using cloud computing, and this is really obvious for this audience. Everybody should be going, yeah, you know, this is exactly what I expect. But, you know, when you see results like this from surveys, it really makes you have to think a little bit about what the concepts of what people think cloud computing is about. So following NIST guidelines on cloud computing, there's five basic principles. I'm sure, again, all of you are aware, but this is one, again, level set everybody just so we know we're talking about the same thing. Broad network access, rapid elasticity, measured service, self-service, and resource pooling. Those are the principles that everything throughout this presentation addresses, works really on those key elements. And then the three models is infrastructure, platform, and software. Again, everything that I do throughout this presentation will talk to all those three types of service behaviors. Now, if you have any questions, there were supposed to be some mics set up, but since the mics aren't there, you'll just have to speak really loud, and I'll repeat your question. What are the risks and rewards associated with cloud computing? Well, there's both benefits and there's concerns that most people deal with. Based on most of the research and discovery that we've done, the key three things keep coming up are privacy, security, and reliability. Odds are that the issues that you're dealing with in one capacity or another will touch one of those three items. Now, notice there's one thing that's missing, is cost. And that's the one area I won't touch. Pricing, well, pricing ranges from anything from as cheap as you want it or as expensive as you demand it. But the reality is the next most important elements associated with that have to do with these three items. But the benefits, as we looked at, you know, again, even according to NIST, scalability, agility, flexibility, you know, it's those illities and cost reduction. So that does have a relatively big play in the grand schemes of risk and reward when you're dealing with cloud computing. However, before I spend too much time looking at what that means, we also have to remember there is an exchange that occurs between the consumer and the provider. And frequently, comments that I hear about have to do with the fact that cloud computing will just take those issues and move them away from me. But in reality, it's a shared responsibility. It doesn't matter what you do, you'll always have a shared responsibility, such as data classification and endpoint protection. Those two items will always belong to the individual that's placing data into the cloud. Again, this is pretty obvious information. I think every one of us expects that. Now, what I think may become a little misleading is that data classification and client endpoint protection is applicable to all services, infrastructure, platform, software. There is no exception. Those items belong to you, unless you're a provider. Let me ask you, anybody here represent a provider? Or how about another one is kind of a middle ground, the broker. You're using a provider like Azure, then you're taking a product, repackaging it as a cloud service and selling it. Anybody represent that? All right. So at the end of the day, your customers still have that ultimate responsibility of data classification and client endpoint protection. Now, where things get a little bit more murky and muddy is how infrastructure, platform, and software changes the roles and responsibilities with the other elements, physical security, network controls. The whole idea is as you move up the stack, move away from infrastructure up to software, it's about reducing that level of risk, being able to shift the risk off to a provider. And we'll take a look at what exactly that means in a bit. So what are the benefits? Time savings, money savings, and improved security. So these are facts. People understand that cloud providers can actually improve your security stance. It's a real good benefit, in fact. But what's the barrier? Security. So it's both a benefit and a risk. And we understand that. We have to understand the fact that it fits on both sides. The other two elements is standardization. I imagine that most of you are dealing with some kind of a standardization problem, regulatory bodies. Let me guess, ANISA, BSI, maybe if any of you represent a German agency of some sort. And there's plenty more. In the United States, it's alphabet soup. I'm sure you're aware of that. I know it's alphabet soup here, too. So what's the problem you face, though, when you move to the cloud? I think what most organizations neglect is that it's actually an infrastructure shifting effort. Where are you today? What's your current IT capabilities today? What are some of the process, people process technologies that cloud computing can potentially help you with? And how can it actually then reduce your risk? So to address that problem, about a year ago, I started working with the Cloud Security Alliance. Microsoft started working with the Cloud Security Alliance. And one of the things that we discovered is they created a relatively good way to measure the success of an organization as a provider. Anybody utilize the Cloud Control Matrix, the CCM from CSA? All right. So this will be more relevant to you for everybody else. Hopefully this will be an opportunity to learn a little bit about this association. I'll introduce that in a minute. So let me go into the tool, because if we're going to talk about results from the tool, which is what the trends are, I think it's important to understand the benefits of how the tool operates. And it's a tool. We all like tools, right? At least, I'm sorry. I should say, I really like tools because they're fun to play with. So what is the Cloud Security Alliance? It represents a global not-for-profit. They have a relatively good interests and activities in the European Union. They have now started helping a lot of the regulatory bodies, such as ANISA, develop additional standards definitions. So you can actually request now some of these regulatory bodies to provide you a certification plus CCM, which is the Cloud Control Matrix. What the Cloud Control Matrix does is it provides a relatively normalized set of controls. Controls that are easy to take from one provider to the next. So it's the, I can measure apples to apples or oranges to oranges. So if I ask Microsoft, how do you stand with Cloud Control Matrix? It's in a registry. It's called a star. Then you ask Amazon, how are you doing with the Cloud Control Matrix? It's in the star. If you ask Google, how are you doing with the Cloud Control Matrix? Oh, well, actually, they don't have a star entry. Is that a dig? Yeah, it is, because we've been asking them. As part of an association, the best interest for the industry is everybody having a registry entry on the Cloud Security Alliance's star registry. So what does a Cloud Control Matrix control look like? Relatively simple language, designed to be easy to consume, that addresses currently 98 different control elements. So if you're familiar with any of the control behaviors that you would expect to have to address, and if you're not the auditor, odds are you're made to comply to one of these control issues in one capacity or another. So the language is designed to be relatively simple to consume, plus there's this relative well-standardized body that's already built in. Some additional things that it introduces, which is really clever, which I'll talk to you about in a second. So what does the tool do that I'm trying to lead up to? The Cloud Security Readiness Tool is designed to take 27 of the controls from the 98 and creates a language that's very simple to digest. Based on a maturity model, premise is you can be in the getting started category, so we place you here, making progress, almost there, or in a streamlined effort. You select the radio button. What it does is basically it identifies how your infrastructure, your IT environment is currently, how it can improve, and what can you take care, what advantages can cloud provide for you based on whichever type of cloud capability you're looking for. Generates a report that has the results based on where you are, what would be a good recommendation, and how a cloud provider can assist you in that. And I'll show you how this happens, because I'll actually go through a demo here real quick. The last thing that the report does is it maps back to the control standards based on Federal Office of Information Security for BSI, European Union ENISA, ISO, PCIDSS, HIPAA, NIST, NERC. These are some of the most common regulatory bodies, and the tool will auto-map this for you. Again, I'll show this to you. We'll go through this. This is the beauty about this, is that this report, you can generate in about 15 minutes. And it's something that I know, based on the conversations I've had, especially with people that are trying to consume cloud, a report like this can really make the difference between where do you start the conversation with your management? How do you actually get that message across to them that this is something that you need to be concerned about? So let's do a quick demo here. So I've navigated to the site. It's an open public site. Anybody can get to this. It's just off of here. The link is a little bit obtuse, but I'll show you the best way to get to the link is if you go to Microsoft.com/trustedcloud. There's a get started on that site. Or you can go to the Cloud Security Alliance. So it's cloudsecurityalliance.org. On the right rail at the bottom, get started sends you into the report. That's the easiest way to get there. So how do you use the tool? Let's go through this real quick. You provide a company name. Pick a industry. So here what we'll do is we'll pick banking. Next we'll pick a location, so we'll pick Europe. Next we'll pick a workload that we're interested in moving to. So this time what we'll do is we'll pick business analytics. And last is organization size. This is mainly just about scaling. And notice that the tool automatically selected the type of service model that it thinks that you're asking for, which here particularly it's a software as a service, and it also pre-selected the regulatory behavior that's most likely applicable to you. Not necessarily, but most likely. If you wanted to switch, you obviously can make your own selection and you can go through this and pick something else. For this intents and purposes, I'll go ahead and go into the questionnaire. And as you notice, just like that screenshot that I showed you a minute ago, now we have 27 questions based on a graduating scale from getting started to streamlined, based on 27 individual controls. And the language was designed to be very simple. It's not asking anything that's complicated or potentially misleading. Remember, here we're just trying to learn a little bit about your organization to be able to generate the report. So for now, what I'll do is I'll kind of go relatively simple here. I'll go down to making progress stage of the questions. So bear with me as I go through the 27 questions real quick. Now, obviously, if I were to actually stop and read each one of these, you would probably answer based on how you feel that your organization would be reflective. What we will do, and which is, here's the real clever thing, is that we'll look at how people have been responding worldwide to these 27 questions. And that's the really interesting analytics that we can actually also receive and I can actually share with you. And that information is also available in the report. All right. So we're now on question 13 here. We'll just finish up and then I'll generate the report real quick and just show you the effort. It's relatively seamless. Now it goes through different category areas. For instance, here we're dealing with risk management. All these questions relate to a risk management related issue. And even if you're not really sure what's going on within your organization as to how you're dealing with that risk management, you could still answer relatively with the best guess. Remember, the report is a conversation starter, not entirely to drive a new control behavior. It's about getting that conversation started. So last one here we're dealing with is resilience. Actually, second last one, resilience management. And I'm sure every single one of you have had to deal with something associated with resilience. And if not, we'll talk about the results of what people are actually doing there. And the last one are security architecture issues. This includes antivirus, firewalls. And the last one, for instance, is actually clock synchronization. So there we go. We went through the whole thing. Now we're generating the report. We go create report. And now we'll just go ahead and run for a couple of seconds. Basically, it's taking all that information, compiling it, and generating a PDF document from it. Now that report is customized for the individual use. So every user that goes through this exercise, goes through this process, you get a custom report that was built for you. It's not a static report that gets generated. And the only thing I just realized is I don't know if Adobe Acro, oh, look at that, it's loaded. So there we go. So for Contoso, the report's generated, and we can go through and take a look at one of these controls. By the way, if you were taking screenshots of those previous screens, just run the report and you'll get all that information. Here's security policies and procedures, for instance. Oh, what's that? Nice. You know, I'm going to move that aside here and hide it because I don't want to think about what that says. Notice the fact that the language automatically pre-populates based on ANISA also. So it actually has that tie back. And remember what I was telling you about what's the relevance of that is that, oh, it won't let me do that. Ah, look at that. So I got to go OK. Nasty. So somebody didn't license the software, and it won't let me run it. One more time. And if it fails, then I'm just going to keep moving through the slides. All right. One more second here. As you notice, it's not a cached activity either. Each time it generates it, it actually runs the report. It tabulates all the information and auto-generates the results from that. So what I wanted to do, though, is jump, even if it comes up with that, is a control mapping. So each one of those controls, the 27 elements, will have a control mapping that it displays. And you see, the minute I click anything there, it's going to have a problem. And there's the controls associated with security policy for BSI and also for ANISA. All right. So let's get back to my slides here real quick and jump through last thing, which are cloud trends. And I imagine that there is some value in understanding what's happening in cloud trends. What we're going to look at are top, bottom, government, military, nonprofit, and regulations more SKUs. And I'll primarily address issues that are occurring in the European-based results. What's interesting enough is that we had about 5,700 people go through the process and provide this information anonymously. And I know all of you are like shaking your head going, anonymous data, well, how anonymous is it? And it really is anonymous. There is absolutely no user information attached to this. We have some really interesting results, too, is both the US and in Europe, we only had a plus minus 1% margin of error. So the information I'll share with you is relatively accurate for the information being provided by individuals. And then this was over a six-month period. Now, as I said, I have a couple of copies of the actual printed report. They're really pretty, and I'm more than glad to give them away. In fact, I'm hoping somebody wants them. You know why? Because I don't want to haul them back with me. So, yeah, okay. What are areas where organizations have actually improved? So the information that we received indicated that most organizations have some form of antivirus and anti-malware software installed, centrally managed and audited. Pretty remarkable in my mind. This is an area that has historically been a concern for most organizations. Do they have it deployed? Well, generally the answer is yes. This is an area that organizations have actually moved forward. Facility control, specifically user-based access control to buildings and facilities. Who gets into where? Does anybody walk into a data center with no level of control management in place? Generally, the answer is most organizations have some control in place. And last is clock synchronization. Now, I have these really clever packs. It has a laser pointer, a USB stick, and a compass. If somebody tells me why you think clock synchronization would be on the up is one, and two is what's the significance of clock synchronization? Why does anybody care? See, a hand goes up right away. Right. Law of correlation is the original answer that I was thinking about, so that definitely earns that. Anybody have one more guess? Because there's one other one that I was like thinking, come on, this is a Microsoft product lineup. There's something very specific. I'm sorry? Token. Go on that concept of token. How about Kerberos? What happens if your Kerberos tokens are out of sync? AD kind of stops working, doesn't it? So having a clock synchronization is actually pretty essential for organizations to have in place. All right. So where are the issues with organizations? There's plenty of them, but here are the worst ones. Now, notice that the controls that we are looking at don't only focus on IT, but they also focus things on legal and human resources, which ultimately does impact you. You may think, no, I don't touch human resources, but it does. Human resources has some direct impact these days. Human resources, particularly around prudent hiring practices. Frequently I ask the question is, so when's the last time your hiring practice, whoever hired somebody, did a proper background check, utilized legal means to do some checking? Oh, I'm sorry, that's right. Now these days we do social media check, right? That's how we validate people are who they say they are. Question that comes to that is it something that stands up in court, for instance? Would it actually meet the requirements for auditability? I think the general answer, and based on the results that we had, is no. Most organizations don't do anything very extensive for that. Or your non-disclosure agreement. I actually started thinking about that one. So if you consider a non-disclosure agreement, a piece of paper that you sign that goes into some kind of drawer somewhere, so how many of you would think that that's a non-disclosure agreement that you last signed? Is a piece of paper that made into a file cabinet and you've never seen it again. Is that your NDA? No, electronic? So most of you have electronic NDAs, centrally managed, audited. That's pretty brilliant if that's the case, because most organizations do not. And capacity planning, that's another area that's a really big issue, is associated with capacity planning and equipment maintenance. Deploy servers into your data center. When's the last time that that device has had its, as an asset, when's the last time it was serviced by the manufacturer? Is the manufacturer still in existence? That's another question that sometimes comes up. All right. So we'll dig in a little bit more here. From the rest of the questions forward, we're actually now diving in and we're looking at the data a little bit more closely. We'll be, whenever you see the scales of getting started, making progress almost there, that's the same question model that we looked at in the tool. So just keep in mind that the premise behind getting started is it's this concept of it's undocumented and ad hoc state. Making progress looks like something where you actually have some kind of a response driven to processes, some basic processes in place, very rudimentary, paper trail at least, maybe. Almost there, you've got scalability, usually still segmentation, maybe business units don't operate together, and last is the streamline, centrally automated, audited, right? Those are kind of the key things to take away from that. So looking at that, one of the exercises we went through is looking at the 27 questions, and that's how we ended up with those two first slides just a couple ago, is we provided a value of +1 on almost there streamlined and a -1 on getting started and making progress. Just kind of visualize how are people doing? What's the world's reception to cloud, to their IT infrastructure? Question number 11, you see the question list at the bottom, question number 11. Question number 18, 21 ranked on the lowest. We see that question number 26 ranked at the highest. Now you're going, well, I don't know what those questions are. So don't worry, I'll tell you what those questions are because we'll look at each one of those charts just in 1 second. So moving through this, question number 25, that was that one at the end. I said 26, it's actually, I meant 25. See, I even mix up my numbers ever so often. Information security, any virus and any malware. Europe, what does it look like? Well, here's the trend. We see the very much like, in a second, I'm losing my voice. Most organizations have shown some serious progress. We're seeing organizations in the audited, centrally managed environments. Antivirus is something that organizations have control over. How does that relate with the worldwide trend? We see that from a worldwide perspective, there's also a relatively solid trend that antivirus has been adopted by organizations. Whereas the exception is we have a spike on the getting started in Asia. Kind of a curiosity, I thought, when you start thinking about some of the other values, Asia tends to drag behind quite a bit. And when I've had Asian audiences, I've asked whether that makes sense. Interestingly enough, most of the audiences that represents China, Hong Kong, say that, yeah, you know, they have regulatory environments that are so impossible to manage that half the time they just do not implement technology. They just take a stand back. Happens to be there's a lot of XP out there too. And I'm sure every one of you have gotten rid of your XP installations, right? Anybody running XP? Not for long, though, right? It's the right answer. So one of the other elements to take a look at, again, a dichotomy, is patch management versus antivirus. You'd think that those two would also follow somewhat of a similar trend. Turns out they don't. They are actually, they're quite opposed from each other, in fact. You see that when we're dealing with patch management, patch management definitely leans to the left side on a much less mature stage. Most organizations do not have centrally audited patch management environments in place. This is definitely a concern, especially in-house, because anything that's not patched is subject to a security vulnerability, most likely. Now, what does a cloud provider provide you to offset this? You know, very simple is that it doesn't matter if you're using anything above an infrastructure as a service, so if you're dealing with a platform or a software, the provider looks after patch management for you. It's not your responsibility anymore. You've shifted that risk. Right? Ultimately, that's a huge benefit for you, is don't own the risk. How can you shift it away from yourself? How can you move it to a provider? And then on the flip side, as you see again, we see the high rate of antivirus on the right side there at 41%. So next set of pillars here is that employment agreement, which we looked at a bit ago. I mentioned that this was something that was somewhat of an interesting factor, is that what we see here is combining this and this, just about 80%. Organizations do not have employment agreements that are centrally managed and audited. Most organizations have paper copies of employment agreements, and hopefully they were filed properly. Hopefully they're updated occasionally. Hate to think that what happens if you change jobs or roles, does that employment agreement still apply? How does that stack up to the world? Generally, the answer is, yeah, it's about the same. Most worldwide organizations do not have this issue tackled. So let's look at a couple of other items here, such as capacity planning. This is by far one of the biggest items that you can take a cloud provider, reduce some of the issues associated with, right? The whole concept of elastic computing, right? Provide capacity on demand. High benefit for organizations that are sitting in here. Those are all the organizations that can today take benefit of cloud computing to address this problem very quickly. So if you feel that you fall into that category, odds are that this is something that you can take benefit of. How many of you have dealt with, and the question is, do you even know what is, a black swan when it comes with an incident? Surprise. What is a black swan? Come on. Incident. Yeah, something, a very unlikely event that you practice for. So if you do a black swan incident management or incident response process, it means that you're practicing for the worst case scenario. That's a pretty good answer. Hopefully that doesn't hurt. So cloud providers such as Microsoft exercise black swans. Our incident teams are responsible to go through that effort of what happens in the worst case scenario. Hopefully that's a good thing for you, because you don't have to do it. Your provider should do this for you. That's not just Microsoft, but that's all providers. If they don't exercise that and they don't have a proper incident reporting process in place, they are selling you short. Clearly, most organizations, when you think about it, come on, sit inside there. You see, the worldwide trend is setting up an incident response and incident management effort, the methodology, the staffing, processes to implement are complicated. And especially if you're a mid-tier provider, if you're a broker, have you, for a couple of folks here that had were doing some kind of brokerage work, have you set up an incident management process and tested it? I don't know. You guys were brokers, right? No? No. There's a broker over here. But he's busy. Capacity planning, which we talked about a bit ago. Here's specifically about resources, allocating the resources. And you see, in Europe, the general trend, again, sits inside that window. Not exactly a very encouraging behavior when you think about the fact that capacity planning is one of the things that, again, cloud providers could really make a big difference for you. One of the scenarios that this reminds me of is, it's called the Christmas rush. At least in North America, you know, Christmas is a pretty big purchasing time. And the CSO that I was dealing with, who at the time was working for a relatively large vendor, indicated that when they had their Christmas rush occur, as a CSO, he'd pull his Amex out of his wallet and say, buy capacity. Whatever that took. Well, for them, it was particular that they would then take customer data and customer VMs and place it on Amazon. Amazon does a great job for infrastructure as a service, but one of the questions I had is, does that mean that you guys followed all your policies when you did that? And he's like, you know. But we got our capacity, and we're able to continue business. So things to consider when you think about capacity planning. Cloud providers can give it to you, because that's the whole thing about Elastic, but there still has to be some level of constraint on how you actually execute that. Where does the regulation distribution occur within the tool? Well, primarily it falls into a couple of really key categories, which isn't really a surprise, but it's one worth sharing. As you see in the United States, Africa, Australia, the primary is ISO. Most organizations that have utilized a tool tended to lean to ISO, the IEC 27001 2005. In Europe and Asia, it's primarily ANISA. Is that a surprise? Because it's not really to me. Yeah, Asia is a very, very small number. So where does the Asia or Europe? Europe, remember I showed you the margin of error at the beginning? Asia does reflect part of that error, larger error element inside this chart. So this does represent primarily Europe. Yeah, that's a great question, though. So one of the other slices that we took is taking a look at individual pillars based on industry. So we'll look at closely nonprofits, for instance. Where does nonprofits lay? Well, think this isn't just small nonprofits. These are large nonprofits, too. It really does range full-size organizations as large as enterprise all the way down to just small churches, for instance, which qualify as nonprofits. Interestingly enough, I think of nonprofits like Red Cross. It really is concerning to see nonprofits having such a high rate on the getting started. I mean, organizations are saying, yeah, we really don't have anything in place for resilience. We don't know how to deal with resilience. So think of a nonprofit that you deal with right now. Do they have any type of resilience planning in place? Evidence indicates that most of these nonprofits do not have anything currently set up. Equipment location was another thing that had some very interesting trends. There are two things that stood out to me. One is when you think about North America, just about 80%. Equipment location, meaning where is your equipment located? Primarily, the answer would associate, so this getting started would be that it's in-house on facility, possibly in some kind of a back closet. No data center that's properly set up. Data center means a closet, not a data center with, you know, power and all kinds of management issues in place. The other thing that I thought was interesting is Europe. On the flip side, it's almost at 40-some-odd percent, 42, 43%. So Europe is definitely doing better when it comes to nonprofit equipment location. Power failure is the last thing I think we're looking at for nonprofit. Again, a couple of really interesting things that kind of stand out. One is we had nobody respond in the almost there category. However, we see this really high spike there, particularly placing Europe into almost 65-67% not having adequate power failure solutions in place. So we're at this stage, when we're dealing with making progress, we're talking about a generator, on-site, period. The next stage would have been having redundant power capabilities, maybe multiple providers, or having some additional technologies in place to be able to extend that capability. And last, come back to this incident reporting process. This is abysmal for nonprofits. Truly abysmal. I mean, again, we see the fact that this is right up just about 80%. So most nonprofits, such as, for instance, some of the bigger ones, I keep pointing to Red Cross, and if somebody here is from the Red Cross organization, your DIT department, I'm terribly sorry because maybe you're not the one that I'm representing, but I think of organizations like that. When I reflect at these values, is just about 80% of those organizations, so that organization does not have an incident response process in place. If a disaster occurs, as simple as a laptop getting stolen, or as complex as one of their data centers getting sucked up by a sinkhole, they have no proper formalized plan to recover. Now, does that surprise anybody? No? It kind of surprised me, and I'm up here and you're back there, right? So that's a good thing. All right. As I move out of my presentation, I wanted to share one thing. This kind of actually ties back to big data. I always thought there was some fascinating elements associated with that. So the question I have, thinking about big data, what's the relationship between unscented lotion, calcium, and zinc? I'll give this for somebody who can maybe take a stab at this. I'll start reading the letter that actually is associated with this. So second thing has to do with coupons arriving in the mail. Father writes a relatively large chain. That's a second one, right? Well, you're going to have to give it away to somebody. So my daughter got this in the mail, coupons. He said, she's still in high school, and you're sending her coupons for baby clothes and crib. Are you trying to encourage her to get pregnant? On the phone, though, the father was somewhat abashed. I had a talk with my daughter, he says, in the near future. It turns out there's been some activities in the house I haven't been completely aware of. She's due in August. So I owe you an apology. This was to Target. So that is big data in action. Unscented lotion, calcium and zinc was used to correlate pregnancy. They created a meter called the pregnancy meter based on those three indicators. So next time you go shopping, remember if somebody's buying those three things, odds are you're going to be getting coupons for a crib in the future. How do small, medium business benefit from cloud computing? Well, there's a clear indicator that SMB organizations can take benefit. And you see the clear relationship. This survey was run not too long ago. Again, we see the fact that the key things here is keeping systems up to date, antivirus, and spam email management. Those are some of the benefits of utilizing cloud capabilities. All right, so some resources here. So we have some resources associated with first where you can find the tool. It's all on the Tech Center. And there's additional literature available. And as I said, I have some of that literature up here too. If you're willing to take some, I'd be glad to give this away. And at this time, I'm ahead of my schedule, which is perfect. That means that you guys have a little bit of time to go in the sun. I'll also take some questions if you have any. Hopefully you got some questions, because I'm going to give you back 30 minutes otherwise. No questions? You know, I was told, unlike in North America when I did this presentation, I had lots of questions. And here everybody's so quiet. It's like, you guys are the nicest crowd, you know that? Am I trying to butter you up? Yeah, because I need some survey results too, by the way. All right, well, I guess if there's no questions, hopefully you'll come up here and grab some of this paperwork, because I want to give this away to you. It's really cool stuff, too. And I thank you for your time.